This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of WorldSweeper.com and the director of the World Sweeping Association. For our featured contractor for October 2015, I have on the phone with me Jeff Spahn. Jeff is the owner of Hamel Parking Lot Service. They've been in operation since 1968, a long time. I know because I graduated in 1968, and that wasn't yesterday. We're going to talk about the company, and one of the unique things here is that Jeff bought the business last year. It's a going operation, doing quite a bit of business in a lot of different areas. And one of the things I wanted to talk to him about is his experience in coming into a business like this as a new owner, having a business that's really moving to walk in with. Jeff, thanks for your time.
Yeah, no problem.
Talk to me about the background of Hamel Parking Lot Service, and then from there we could talk about what your background was, why you bought this particular company, what the attraction was, that kind of thing.
The company's background is it was started by a guy named Tom Hamel back in 1968. He was working for John Deere as a worker out there at the plant, and he started striping parking lots on the side. And then he found more and more business with striping, sweeping, and then getting into repairs. And our major focus is full-on parking lot and road construction. We do actually residential neighborhood roads, some small municipalities, and then we pave, repair, concrete, flat work. And sweep.
What's been your experience in terms of purchasing the company? What were you looking for as an attractive company to buy, and why did you pick this one?
I needed something to do. My family owns a large chain of lumber yards here in the Midwest, and I left that business about 6 years ago after some unfortunate deaths in the family. I kind of played around with a factory I owned, and I got kind of bored. I'd known Tom for 25 years, probably. He was getting into his early 80s, and I just started bugging him to sell me his company. I told him it was time to retire, and he needed a hobby to go off and stop working.
And that worked for you?
Yeah, that's about 3 years.
Uh-huh.
It's a great business because it lets me, you know, even with the sweeping here in Iowa, we get a lot of, you know, we do a lot of snow plowing, but my crews do that, so I spend the winter skiing, traveling around the country skiing.
Well, that's a good job if you can get it, I would say. You get enough snow in the winter there. You're in the Dubuque, Iowa area. You get enough snow in the winter that basically parking lot sweeping is done.
Oh, it's done. Let's just right around Christmas, probably. That's
mm-hmm.
when the snow really starts coming. It's gone until, I'd say late March. It's all plowing then, all commercial plowing.
On the snow plow side, because we have a lot of sweeping contractors that do snow plowing as well, do you tend to have a contract with your snowplow individuals that say, here's how much we're going to charge you, whether it snows or not? Or
we basically do it on a per-time basis, and we charge by the hour and then by the ton of salt.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a set schedule like we do with our sweeping, where we tell the banks, we do a couple large banks and some shopping centers that, hey, we're going to be there every Wednesday night. Wow, if it's a snowstorm, we park a guy in their lot with an end loader and a tandem axle dump truck, and he might sit there for 24 or 36 hours, a crew rotating on and off until the lot's clear.
Mm-hmm.
We don't use, little pickups or anything. We're using 10-yard tandem axle trucks and large Cat 924 loaders and with 10-yard bucks.
Snow is a serious occurrence.
Serious.
Yeah.
This isn't like you'd get in Atlanta or something. I mean, when we get, 24 or 30 inches of snowfall in one drop.
Yeah.
Overnight, and sometimes it's wet, heavy snow. So it's a nice tie-in to our sweeping business and our parking lot construction because the seasons are opposite each other.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That makes perfect sense, and that's why I say there are a lot of people out there listening that also do snowplow with their, and snow abatement, I try to call it, because there's so much more that can be there besides just snow plowing, like you say, sand, putting the sand down, salt, sidewalks, entranceways. If it's about to freeze, but just barely, you can keep those sidewalks bare and dry and keep the businesses open and that kind of thing.
We don't really get into any residential work. We might have one or two guys that we do residential work for, but they don't have what you would consider a typical driveway. It might be a very, very large lane.
Then, of course, when you clean up in the spring, that must be an interesting contract to try to negotiate in terms of your first initial spring cleanup when you have that much snow.
We've had the same accounts at some locations for 20 years. So they just know that come springtime, we're going to have some extra cleanings to pick up the crap that accumulates underneath the snow. People tend to dump their garbage and not really care. And it doesn't really show up until the snow's gone.
Yeah.
And then we go and we give them an extra sweep. We spend a little extra time on the main lanes getting the sand out. Because even though our salt, we don't use a lot of sand here, our salt does have some sand. sand incidentally in it,
mm-hmm.
through the process of mining, and we got to clean that up. Plus all the stuff they pick up off the road and that falls off the cars. And
well, talk to me about the typical insurance scenario there. The nice thing about a place that's really in the snow belt, like Iowa is that people are used to being in the snow. And I hear about a lot of slip and fall claims against parking lot sweeping contractors. A lot of it is this kind of detritus that's there from winter. A lot of times they'll get those kinds of claims in the spring. Does that happen much out there, or are people just figure, hey, look, it's been snowy, it's been icy, and I can take care of myself?
Well, as the years have gone on, more and more people seem to be seeing a lawsuit as an income source. They're trying to do more slip and falls, and the way we handle with both our salting and our sweeping is we keep records of every time we went.
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally, when that customer, say we have a Kmart that has a slip and fall, and they'll come to us, and the customer will say, hey, this person's trying to sue us, saying we've never salted our lot, or you didn't clean up the sand that had accumulated. And we say, well, at 3 o'clock on the 21st, we put down 14 tons of salt. And at 4 o'clock, we put down 18 tons. And then if it gets into more of the springtime and it's drier, but there's some sand that could be slippery, we say, well, we swept at 3 a.m. today, and here's where we swept. Keeping good records is a really important part, and it kind of leads into something. I also own a GPS services company that we're going to try to incorporate in some of the surveying software and farm tracking software into our salt and sweeping trucks, so we get a GPS track of where we've been.
Very nice, yeah.
So we can, not so we know where our truck is, but at the end of the day, we can download that data, and or even the end of the month, because you can store a lot of data and say, hey, on this date, this is exactly where we were.
That is so critical for insurance claims and as well as for customers who want to know if you were there.
Right, and that's something that I'd like to be able to have as a leg up over my competition. I mean, some of my competition, I can't speak at how they run their things. So, they may say they're doing the work, but maybe they're not. I don't know. But I want to know that my guys are doing what I say they're doing.
Well, and you want to be able to prove that, just because that can become important in a lot of scenarios. Tell me a little more about the surveying software. What does that consist of?
We're kind of like the BASF of, how we take this and make it better. Well, we take auto steer systems for farm equipment, and we make it better by making it more accurate through some proprietary equipment that we've developed. And it records tracks, and much like the farming software records tracks, we can transfer this over to a street. And it'll show exactly down to the centimeter where the truck was. Right now it shows down to the centimeter where the farmer was running his tractor up and down the field so he can plant and harvest and lay herbicide and pesticides. So I thought, well, let's develop that into our software that's not through a Fleetmatics program where somebody comes and sells you something every month. Well, if I own the company, why should I be paying somebody to do something I already do?
That makes perfect sense as well. I mean, as many pots of income as you can develop.
Right. And it can transfer over to, paving. I can show exactly, sure you see it where you paved, but I could put it down on our loader and show, or our roller and show, hey, we rolled here. If you think there's something that wasn't properly compacted, I've got the data to show the roller spent, 9 minutes in this spot of your parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of uses for this stuff.
Absolutely. When contractors don't avail themselves of that kind of what I call low-hanging fruit of professionalism, then just can't figure out why, because it's not that expensive anymore, and it's getting real sophisticated.
Now in today's world anymore, all you got to do is call somebody back. It's getting so bad out there. People just don't even call customers back when they make a phone call. You can get business just doing that. Just return a phone call and get a sale.
Right. I know just what you're saying. Let alone then showing up when you say
right.
You're going to.
Oh, yeah, and show up when you say you're going to show it. And right. Wow, if you're going to be there a Tuesday, at least be there Tuesday.
Right. If you said Tuesday morning and it's Tuesday afternoon, well, that's better than many, I know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
It is. Now, I'm surprised that you use Timco 210. Now, that is not a big enough sweeper to really handle millings, say, behind your paving operation. What do you do there?
We use a box broom up to a track drive Cat 279 skid steer.
Mm-hmm.
And the box broom does, the gross cleanup. And then if we find we need some fine cleanup, then we can run the Timco through there.
Sure.
Pick up the dust. The previous owner had tried to do some heavier pickups. He'd been trying to pick up, say, pine needles. which are too large for the throat on the, you know, they turn into a large mass. It's too large for the throat on the sweeper. He tried to pick up sandblasting Black Beauty, which just eats the sweeper's internals alive.
Sure.
You know, but, you know, you find road sand is fine.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting what will eat up the intake tubes on a sweeper that, and what is okay.
Yeah, blast material, blast media. You know, anything beyond sand, blast media is pretty hard on the inside of a sweeper.
Yeah, that's for sure. What have you found your biggest challenges are taking over a company that's just really rolling here?
I'm going to be dead honest.
Yeah.
I've had no concerns at all. I mean, beyond everybody's concerns of being able to find people that'll show up for work.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nationwide problem right now.
It certainly is.
I'm involved in a panel with local community college, Northeast Iowa Community College, and we're actually partnering with them with some other contractors to try to develop work ethics for workers. And this will apply for sweeping, snow plowing, paving, general contractors, roofers. It's teaching these kids, you know, you come to work in the morning. You don't talk on your cell phone all day. You do what you say you're going to do. You don't whine and cry about what time do I get off tonight. You just stuff that used to be common sense.
Right.
And that's impacting the entire construction and industry as a whole.
So many industries, yeah. And construction-type industries, especially because sometimes you have to work till the job's done.
Everybody will say, my kid's not that way. Well, it seems that most kids are that way nowadays.
Yeah.
My kids, and I tell them, you guys are like, because I just sold the factory. And the reason I sold the factory was because I couldn't get people to show up for work. And that's what I tell my kids. I'm like, you're like my factory workers. You guys aren't even doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Uh-huh. And what do you do when it comes to cell phones? Do you and your workers, do you buy their cell phone time or their cell phones? Or
My foreman and the my number two employee, I pay for their cell phones, 100%. They can use as much as they want, forever they want. I also provide a vehicle to my foreman, you know, 100% personal use. The rest of the workers, you know, they're on their own, but I'm trying to get them to understand, you know, if they're sitting in a truck and say we're sweeping, and he's running up and down. We do an ethanol plant where we sweep up corn dust from grinding for the mash. You know, I don't want him on a cell phone driving up and down this row when we're trying to sweep all this corn dust up so the DNR doesn't get on their case about it getting dropped into a waterway. Because he's going to be sitting there looking at his phone. He's going to have wavy lines. He's not going to be picking up all the stuff. And I try to explain to these kids that you can look at your phone on your own time.
Yeah, I'm not paying you to look at your phone.
Right, exactly.
Whether it's text or whatever it is.
Everybody and their brother has to be on their phone every minute of their lives. But I'm not paying them to be on their phone.
You're such a hard guy.
Well, maybe I am, or maybe I'm just realistic.
Or maybe you're sensible. I'd vote for the latter. Where are you getting your employees? Are you trying to actually pull them out of the community college as they're graduating, how do you advertise?
That's going to happen starting in April. That's when this first class graduates from their 72-hour, what I call, common sense class. And we will see what the first crop leads to. We can't hire them until they actually complete the course. We can put them on our payroll, but we can't take them out of the school until they're done with the course. But beyond that, we've been trying employment agencies, tapping into people that this guy knows and that guy knows. And, you know, beyond people not showing up for work, we got to find people that can pass a drug test. It just seems like there's lots of people out there, but there's not lots of people you can use.
Yeah, that's the thing, especially if you're doing drug testing.
Oh, we have to. I mean, I got somebody running a tandem axle dump truck down the road. I can't have them with the drug violations, moving violations.
My right.
Insurance company won't insure them. Second, you know, some of these locations that we do some sweeping in require a background check because they're secure facilities. And they need to know that the person that they're bringing in as a subcontractor is able to actually enter their property.
Right. And are there special requirements with some of your clients, things like, not having a beard or having particular types of training so that if there was an emergency, they could put a mask on and breathe and that sort of thing.
Facilities we do that for, that they have to go through safety training, learn how to don safety gear. They have to wear a hard hat even while they're in the truck. They have to wear a vest while they're in the truck. Pretty strict rules there. What happens if there's an ammonia leak? What happens if there's an alcohol leak?
Yeah. And you find that that's worth, I know what the answer is going to be here, so I'll just ask it, because I think a lot of contractors out there don't really go through the training necessary. They don't take the time to put an employee through the training necessary to be into those kind of facilities. But in my experience, as you know, seeing this for years and years, is that typically your margins are higher on those kinds of places. They're, a lot of times they're used to paying union wages or something similar to it, and it really makes sense to have employees that are trained for that so you can go after that business. Has that been your experience and that of Tom Hamill?
Yeah, that is. Now, the beautiful thing about these two clients of ours that require extensive safety training are they provide it. You bring your employee in and they train them right there.
That's great. And to be able to do that, I mean, you're having to pay their wages while they're at training. Let's face it.
But
it's not big.
No, it's a several hour class at their facility. So
yeah,
come up for their first sweep. Hey, get up here. You're going to take a tour of the facility. You're going to learn what the safety training these guys go through, what to watch out for, when you can and can't get out of the sweeper, and we just move on from there.
Yeah. What else makes unique at all to be in business in Iowa? Is there any? You talked about water. We just touched on, there's runoff into water. Does anybody care? I mean, you're so far from the coast. Typically,
the Mississippi.
Oh yes. Okay.
Yeah, so we've got the largest river in the United States, flowing right down past us, and all these little tributaries lead right to the Mississippi.
You bet.
They're pretty crazy about that.
So what kind of, what are they saying about it? Are they requiring something in specific? Are there places that are requiring that sweeping be done? I know one of the things that I've railed on editorially at World Sweeper is that I know that the EPA has done everything they can. First they went to the point source pollution guys, which is industry, and they got that, basically cleaned up and said, this has to be cleaned up, this has to, have catch basins or whatever they do, and or sweeping. And then they've done the same with street sweeping in many locations through the stormwater phase one and now phase two. But a piece of the puzzle is really parking lots. And now they're starting to, in some areas, tax the owners of impervious surfaces, which is to say, let's say, malls and industry, based on their square footage of roof and pavement. Is that anything that started to happen out there, or requiring that parking lots be swept?
Well, we're seeing it on the municipal level here in our town, where speaking of stormwater runoff, is they're taxing the homeowner based on square footage of their property, and then charging a tax per square foot on stormwater runoff. Even if you have a catch basin and then nothing runs off, they're still taxing you. I can see that, that's tied into the corporate side, because you're getting that tax.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, just to discuss this for the people listening as well as for your benefit, because you have a 210 and you don't have something that is a municipal class sweeper at this point, is that there are two articles that have come out recently. One is from Seattle, and it's an empirical study that they've done a lot of testing to see what it is that will help their stormwater situation. And what they've found since they've done this concerted sweeping effort is that sweeping is 4 to 10 times more cost-effective than anything they've come up with at the end of the pipe, whether it's catch basins or grassy swales or anything like that. And then I wrote an article that was in Public Works magazine last month in August, 2 months ago, given that this is an October interview. And I brought out a lot of those kind of details as well. And I think that those articles especially really pave the way for a sweeping contractor that is going to go into municipal to educate their city about expanding their street sweeping. And in most cases, it should be doubled or tripled, and get them convinced that that's the most cost-effective way for them to get rid of the stormwater runoff into the Mississippi or the tributaries or you know, whatever bay that they're on, and really make an impact. And I think it's a way to greatly expand the amount of sweeping that's being done by municipalities. So I encourage you and all the listeners to take a look at those articles, because they're real eye-openers.
I'd have to agree with you, because you're removing it before it becomes something that can build up.
You know, yes.
It's gone because it's gone. I mean, it's not an issue because there's nothing there to become an issue because you've swept it.
Well, that's right. And what a lot of the people that are selling you end-of-the-pipe solutions fail to mention is that depending on what the material is that you're trying to get off the roadways and out, or let's just say out of the waterways, about half of the material targeted by the EPA is water-soluble, and the other half is not. So you're fine with a catch basin filter to catch the non-water-soluble items, but otherwise it's the rain dissolves it, it goes right through the filter, and it goes right out into the bay or wherever you don't want it to go. So,
right. So sweep it up and then, you know, dump it in the appropriate location where you can dump it.
Yeah, that's right. And when you talk about the 4 to 10 times more cost-effective, that's to remove a pound of pollutant. In a sweeper load, there may only be a few pounds of pollutant, and yet you'll have, you know, many, many hundreds of pounds of gross, what I call gross material, that's there as well. So you're helping the cosmetic side of things. You're going to reduce the number of people calling, you know, the mayor or the city council or something. And at the same time, you're cleaning up your waterways. So it really is a win-win. One of the things they all need to do, though, is to have parking controls, because if to move around a car, you lose 3 car lengths because you have to go out around them, and then you have to come back in. And it's really important to move those cars. But anyway, that's an aside, certainly from this interview and what we're talking about. Are there any challenges that you didn't expect when you walked into, you know, buying a sweeping and full service company? And just for those listening, Hamel really runs the gamut. You do all manner of asphalt work, seal coating. Paving, we've talked about. You have lots of big equipment. You do property management as well. So it's very full service and so forth. You know, you must have good management team in all of those areas to, you know, let you ski much in the winter.
It's nice because my foreman, I handle all the sales and estimating on the inside. I've got a good office manager that runs all the bookkeeping. My foreman runs the crew outside, so I don't go in and stir the pot outside unless I need to, and say, hey, you know, what's going on here? Just try to come in and let everybody do their job. I give people the power that they need to have, and then I don't try to micromanage them. I find that's the biggest thing is I learned that through my family's company. You know, I was a district manager for several of our lumber yards. We've got 25 locations in Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin, and we learned that you give people the appropriate power, and then let them go, let them do their work.
Right, that's so critical for people to be able to do that, and a lot of people don't want to relinquish that control, and they're out there micromanaging, and that's really trouble. Do you check after your parking lots are cleaned, or are you fine with your operators and what they accomplish? And
we'll make a spot check every now and then you do find some things. You know, you'll find that, hey, the guy might not have spent as much time as he should have there, and you got to come back and have a talk with him and say, look, you know, this customer's paying us to do this job. We're charging, you know, $125 an hour to go sweep this lot. And, you know, we tell them it's going to take 3 hours. We bill them for 3 hours. But, you know, it looks like you only spent 2 there. Tell me what's going on. Well, then you find out, oh, their garden center was in the way. Or there was a car show there, and they left their cars overnight. You know, this is the stuff you got to find. And you find what you need to find. You don't necessarily have to go looking. It's kind of a Zen thing. You don't find what you're looking for. You find what you're supposed to find.
Well, and, you know, as long as you're not finding, too, that, you know, his girlfriend happened to have tickets to a show that started, something, you know, had the night off, and so she was available if he was just off, could get off an hour early or something like
right.
that.
And, you know, I've thought about putting the, you know, with the GPS tracking equipment in, and I can do stuff called geofencing that tells me if a truck
sure.
enters or leaves an area, and it can send me a text alert. I find that might be, you know, if the employees continue down the path that they're continuing on now, that may become a necessity where I have to actually babysit them through technology as opposed to driving around and just sitting there in a lot and you know, with the dark car, and are they really doing their work?
Well, you know, there's another take on that. I think I encourage contractors to, when they do geofencing, to talk about how that's a protection for your employees too, because that way there's proof positive of how long they were in there. You're expecting that they're doing their job, and now if a customer calls and says, well, it looks like you just did a lick and a promise on my property last night, rather than a whole group of teenagers happened to come in after we got done sweeping and trashed the place.
Right.
You can show, you know, how long he was there, and in fact, you know, when you combine that to, was the broom down, was the auxiliary engine running, then we know, you know, he's, and you could see he was moving around the lot. He's not going to be moving around the lot not sweeping. He's going to be out there sweeping. So, yeah. So that can be a protection for your employees. But I'll tell you, at National Pavement Expo, every couple, 3 years, the topic of GPS and how important it is comes up. And if they ask me what, and now a number of other contractors are saying the same thing, how long does it take for GPS to pay for itself? Well, usually about 15 or 20 minutes. I mean, it's usually the first night out, if the employees don't get it, that you find some interesting stuff that's going on. And necessarily is that going to be in every case, but it is a protection for your employees, too. So if you do implement it, I would encourage you to say, well, here's a way we can show. And you're able to then, through your geofencing application, you're able to show for yourself how long you're being out there. So if you're not making money, if it's a three-hour job and you're consistently out there for 3.5 hours, you need to raise your rate. But if it's two, you have the pleasure of calling your customer and saying, you know, we found that we can do it for less, and from now on it'll cost you less money. And boy, I'll tell you, that's the kind of stuff that really wins customers.
Yeah, and it certainly does. You know, if you can make yourself look like a hero by over delivering and under promising, then your customers are going to love you. And you promise you'll do it in three, and you get it done in two, they love you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially for two.
Yeah.
We build for four.
No. Right, right. Well, no, it's we would never do that.
There's people out there that do that. And
sure.
To not do that, because it's going to bite you in the butt.
Yeah, no, it definitely comes back. And they may not say anything, and oftentimes they will not say anything, but
you'll lose the contract,
and you know they'll be much more available to that guy that comes in the door for a little less money. Do you find that because you're so full service that keeps your parking lot sweeping accounts better? I mean, do you do other things like snow plowing and property management, or?
Yep, we do that for some of our largest accounts, some shopping centers and some banks. We do both the sweeping and the plowing for them throughout the year. And we've been doing some of them. We built their lots. We're the only people who've ever swept. We're the only people who've ever plowed. So, I mean, we know the facility inside and out. We know what needs to be done. We constantly have our eye on the property. So we can tell them, hey, you know, you've got a water drainage problem here. It looks like there's some ground movement going on. We should probably address this in your budget plan 4 years from now. And I actually have a bank customer with several locations that we manage that I go around and I do a five-year plan for them and say, hey, you know, this is the state of your lots. They're going to need to be this, this, and this, and this is what we got to look at in the next 5 years, and this is where we can start budgeting.
Yeah, being able to anticipate those kinds of expenses and amortize them out over time and get ready for them and put some money in the bank and so forth, that is so critical, you know, to be able to do. Do you do anything like monthly property assessments for anybody?
No, we're not doing any of that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our stuff is for our property management. It's mostly on the help them develop long-term planning for their pavement needs.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one thing that you may want to take a look at is I know there are a number of contractors out there that at least offer that as a service, and it's really nothing more than a checklist that you have, and whoever goes out to monitor, say, supervise the job on the parking lot, typically they, you know, they just make sure to go there once a month and fill out the form, and that shows the client, you know, if there are any parking lights, lot lights that are out, or you know, cracks in the pavement, or a broken window, or whatever that's out there too, and you know, it's typically $100 to do something like that. anyway. And, you know, it's something else that can bring in a few extra dollars.
That's an interesting concept. I've never thought of going that far with it.
Mm-hmm.
I just may take that and run with it.
Well, then they have contractors that are certainly out there doing vanilla boxes for their clients. They're showing the properties. You know, that's usually $100 also. You know, we're right there for you, you know, really whatever you want. But to let people know that, hey, if you're a remote property manager and somebody moves out, sometimes they move out in the middle of the night and leave a bunch of stuff. But in any event, it needs to be clean. So it certainly doesn't take much training to go in and, you know, clean out an office space, vanilla it back up, change ceiling tiles if you need to, or lights or whatever. And then, or bring an electrician, you know, electrical contractor, whoever you need to adjunct that. And then, you know, we can even show your property for you. And those kinds of things especially really keep the client happy. With, you know, somebody can come in and say, well, we'll sweep your parking lot for 20% less. And they'll say, well, here's the door. Thank you. Because they're not going to replace that. If as handy as you can be, I always encourage contractors to be that handy. Even if, to start with, you're going out on that service and getting somebody else to do it, then if you build the business up enough, you know, a lot of times you then take it in-house is the time to take it in.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we should talk about that you think other contractors out there might want to know that might help them? You've touched on a number of areas, Jeff, that I think are real positive information.
Oh, I don't think there's, no, you, I think you pretty much led me down the road with all the things that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly have covered a lot of area. I hope that I won't get off the phone and then, you know, wish that we had talked about something else. But I think we have talked about pretty much everything that I had had in mind to cover as well. So if that's the case, going, gone, I'll just close it out. We've been speaking with Jeff Spahn, and Jeff is the owner of Hamel Parking Lot Service, and they call themselves a parking lot service, but they do a wide variety of parking lot maintenance and property management and so forth, as well as sweeping. They're located in Dubuque, Iowa, and they are the WorldSweeper.com, World Sweeping Association, featured contractor for October 2015. Thank you very much.